each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon and welcome to Winds of Change. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today, as I do on most Mondays, for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am joined today by a friend of the show, Father Brendan Guilfoyle, who is the associate pastor at St. George Church in Tinley Park, Illinois, which is in the southwest suburbs of the great city of Chicago. Father Brendan, welcome.
Thank you, Mary.
Good to be here. Thank you for coming again, Father. You're so generous to share your time with us and your wisdom. We're going to talk about a couple of things today. It's a big day today. It's St. Joseph's Day, which is a solemnity in the church, which is a very important day. So, Father, why don't we start by your explaining to people what a solemnity is and why this day during Lent is really a very special and different sort of day?
Sure. Well, in the Catholic Church, we have different rankings of feast days. Some are more important, some are less important. Some are optional. Some are what we call memorials, that are times when we stop just to remember a particular saint. Some are called feasts and then solemnities, which are the highest and the holiest of days, the days that celebrate the most important mysteries of our faith. And St. Joseph is part of the most important mystery of the faith, which is the Holy Family. And it's especially meaningful during Lent because, as Jesus tells some of those who follow John the Baptist or the Pharisees in the New Testament, that no one can fast while the bridegroom is present among them. Hmm. It's a reminder that even in the midst of Lent, there is reason to celebrate, and sometimes we have to take time specifically to celebrate, that celebrations and rejoicing are very important, even in the midst of times of seriousness or sorrow.
Right. And so what this means sort of practically for people who are observing a particular Lenten fast or Lenten discipline is that they are excused from that on a solemnity, correct?
It does mean that. And it's a chance to remember that God's goodness is present and that, you know, God does ultimately want us to rejoice. And even our fasting is meant to ultimately bring us to joy.
Yes, it's one of those, I think, you know, kind of wild card days that you get during Lent where, you know, if you've given up a particular thing that you can not abstain from the thing you've given up, that doesn't make any sense, but that you're allowed to partake of that particular thing you're fasting from out of sort of respect for the day.
Sure.
Yeah.
Kind of like how some of my friends who are dieting have cheat days, that it's not about, you know, giving up absolutely everything, and it's not to throw away a diet, but rather it's to remind ourselves that we can still enjoy good things and that there is a time and a place for the good things in life.
I have a friend who, during Lent, always tries to give up alcohol, but then he always gives himself 3 wild card days. So the days where he absolutely feels like he needs a drink or he can't get through the rest of the day. And St. Joseph's Day is almost always one of them because I don't think, do you know, in terms of the Lenten calendar, would there ever be a time where St. Joseph's Day would happen before Lent begins? I don't think so. It would always be during Lent, right?
Or in some cases, if it falls during Holy Week, then it would be transferred to the first week of Easter.
Right. I remember that's only happened once, I think, because the earliest Easter can ever be is March 24th. Is that correct? Or March 25th? It's one of the 2 days in terms of where the moon, you know, because it has to do after the first full moon in
spring.
Yeah,
after the... the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox. So it would have to be after the spring equinox. I'd have to check my calendar.
Yeah,
I remember my astronomy.
Well, no. I mention it because I remember a number of years ago I was at a birthday party for one of my daughter's little friends, and her birthday was either March 24th or March 26th. I can't remember which one. And she was saying, and her birthday was falling on Easter that year. And she was saying, I think there was something in the newspaper that said this won't happen again now for another 150 years, that it's the earliest Easter can ever be happened to fall that year. It was about 10 years ago, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. But so those of you who don't know how Easter is calculated and why, unlike Christmas, where the day is a standard day all the time, Easter changes depending on when the first full moon of the spring occurs, because that's because our Easter is connected to the Jewish Passover, and the Jews would calculate their Passover based on the first full moon in the spring, and that's how our Easter, how we derive our Easter holiday. And so that's why it's a floating day and not a set date like Christmas is. So, all right, so everybody, if you've given up sweets or if you've given up alcohol, or if you've given up yelling at your husband, you can do all those things. No, you can't. You can't yell at your husband, but you can enjoy good things you may have given up in honor of Saint Joseph. So, let's talk about Saint Joseph himself, Father. How would you, if you're meeting your 10-minute or 10-second rather Saint Joseph elevator speech, how would you describe him?
A man who leads by example.
That's very beautiful. That's a good way to sum it up.
Yeah, it's interesting because. On Facebook, some of my smart alecky Catholic friends love to pass.
You have smart alecky friends?
I know.
Shocking. Am I among them?
Indeed.
I think I'm your favorite smart alecky friend.
Oh, I have.
Or I'd like to think I am. Okay.
And some of them have passed around a meme that has a picture of St. Joseph, and it says, "My favorite St. Joseph quote," and it has open quotation marks, blank, close.
Oh, that's very funny.
He doesn't say anything in the scriptures.
Right, there's nothing recorded.
And there's a beautiful sense in that, in spite of the fact that he says absolutely nothing, at least that's recorded. Of course, he said things, I'm sure.
Right. I'm sure he and Mary talked at some point. Yeah.
You have to believe so, yes. But, we see in his example what it means to be a Christian man, what it means to be a husband, and what it means to be a father, even without words. And, there's that old axiom, actions speak louder than words. Well, I think nowhere is that truer than with St. Joseph. We see him preach to us, not in any words, but purely by example.
Mm-hmm. And, there's so much sort of beautiful reflection that the church offers us on St. Joseph. The thing, I guess, if I had to give my 10-second elevator speech, I gave it to my daughter, my teenage daughter, in the car this morning, as a matter of fact, because she had a test today. And I said, you know what, Lucy, I said, St. Teresa of Avila, who was one of the great women doctors of the church, one of the great, philosophers of her time, said there was that she had begun before St. Joseph's feast day to do a novena to ask him for a particular thing for the Carmelite convent that she belonged to or one of her sisters or something like that. And she said, there was never anything I asked St. Joseph when doing the novena prior to his feast day that he did not grant me. And if there was something if what I had asked was somehow amiss, St. Joseph actively showed me how he rectified it for my better good and gave me something even better than what I was asking for. So I said to my daughter, you couldn't get better publicity than that, than St. Teresa of Avila saying, there's nothing I've ever asked St. Joseph for that he didn't provide for me and help me with. So that's, I think a great example of how St. Joseph, in his own quiet, steady way, helps people who turn to him in need.
Indeed, there is that. And really what I've always loved about St. Joseph is how he shows us in his example what it means to love. Fundamentally, St. Thomas Aquinas tells us love is ultimately looking out for the good of the other, willing the good of the other as another individual, as an instance of God's love, rather than for selfish purposes.
Right.
So what does he do? Well, even early on, when he discovers that Mary is pregnant before the angel reveals to him what has happened, he intends to divorce her quietly instead of expose her to shame. In other words, yes, he's planning to break up with her, but he's not going to allow her to be stoned to death, and he's not going to allow her to experience public humiliation. He's still looking out for her good, even when he thinks, mistakenly, that something gravely sinful has happened and that she has betrayed him.
Yeah.
Now, of course, he realizes when the angel reveals himself to Joseph and reveals to Joseph what has happened to Mary, he, of course, accepts immediately, and he works to protect Jesus and Mary and to guide them to holiness. He shelters them in Bethlehem when they have traveled to the census. He flees and helps them to flee to Egypt to protect them. He works as a craftsman to provide for them. He presents Jesus to the Lord in the temple. He ensures that Jesus has that relationship with the Father. And he's concerned for Jesus when he finds the boy Jesus in the temple when he's 12 years old. And there is always this concern that he has for Jesus and for Mary, and sees to their well-being in spite of not saying anything.
Right. Well, not to mention the flight into Egypt.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned in terms of, protecting them.
Right. Right. And well, the one of the, I guess, names for St. Joseph or ways in which he's referred to as Joseph, man of dreams. Mm-hmm. So we don't hear Joseph speak in the same way we hear Mary speak, but we do know about Joseph's dreams. Scriptures do tell us about the number of times the Lord spoke to him in a dream and told him to do, this, that, or the other thing in order to protect his wife, in order to protect his foster son. And to literally protect them from death in the case of Herod. So it's interesting that he is an obedient person and not someone who questioned, unlike, others in the scriptures who we see may have a dream or an angel, and they question whether or not this is God actually asking them to do something. In Joseph's case, we see complete obedience and immediate obedience, don't we?
Yeah, we see someone who responds to God, and that's ultimately what we're all called to do. I mean, God is God. We respond to him, and so Joseph is that example of responding generously, as is Mary, of course.
Mm-hmm, right. And so, you have the man of dreams. You have the sort of silent, the strong silent type, if you will, right? But it is one of those things where you see in St. Joseph the role model for something that's sort of a very, in topic right now, if you will, which is sort of the masculine Christian gentleman. And there's been this tremendous explosion in interest in a Canadian psychologist named Jordan Peterson, who has a book that's now on the New York Times bestseller list. I think it's in the number 2 position. It was a number 3 last week, called 12 Rules for Life. And it really is, at its essence, I mean, anybody can read it, but it's a book for young men, essentially on how to become young men. What are 12 rules for your life that will help you to become an independent, considerate, productive gentleman? And St. Joseph was all of those things. And Jordan Peterson, I don't even think he's a Christian, much less, I know he's not a Catholic, but I'm not even sure that he is a Christian, although he certainly has studied the scriptures in terms of their effect on literature, if you will. So he knows all the scripture stories. Whether or not he believes them is another story altogether. But there's been a complete explosion in people interested in this work. And I'd like to think that St. Joseph really sort of lays the groundwork for anyone who would aspire to that sort of role model.
Well, certainly, I think in a lot of ways he can. I confess I don't know much about Jordan Peterson. I've not actually read his articles, although I have read Bishop Barron's discussion of
I saw that.
Which was excellent, of course. And at the same time, you need only look in our society to see where the idea of manliness goes wrong. It goes wrong in one of two ways. Either it's the stereotypical in comedies, the lazy, absorbed in video games and sex individual, basically overdeveloped frat boy.
Right, exactly.
Or the hyper-violent individual that we see glorified in, certain forms of music and certain form videos and television shows, that it's being aggressive. And neither of those is what manliness is all about. Manliness is really fundamentally about, using one's strength in order to respond to God and in order to protect and to serve in the realest possible way, to protect and to serve those who are in his care.
Right. Well, Father Brendan, thank you. That's a perfect break to stop at before we go to the break. But when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about great St. Joseph with Father Brendan Guilfoyle. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every first Friday, Jeff Hammond sits in to host Winds of Change to talk about the First Friday devotion. Jeff is the section representative of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Jeff will share the history, tradition, and prayers of the First Friday devotion. First Fridays at noon on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and live streaming at windsofchangeshow.com. And I am joined today by Father Brendan Guilfoyle, who's a friend of the show. You're an official friend of the show because now you've come back twice. I didn't scare you off the first time, which is good. So you are here with us. You are the associate pastor at St. George's Church in Tinley Park, Illinois, yep. Which is in the southwest suburbs. And we're talking today about St. Joseph, because today is St. Joseph's Day. So not just a day that we wear red, which is interesting that people wear red on St. Joseph's Day because he wasn't a martyr.
Yeah, it's not the color that the church has for liturgy. I would assume that's a cultural phenomenon, although I can't say I know the history of that.
Right, I don't either. Now that I just, that was just a spontaneous question. I just thought, oh, why do people wear red? He's not a martyr. What's the liturgical color for today?
Well, liturgical color is white because it is a celebration of a great saint. So we wear white in honor of rejoicing.
Okay. So, all right, good to know. So we got to get that word out, though. Don't wear red on St. Joseph. Like my daughter's class on Friday, they could either wear green for St. Patrick's Day or red for St. Joseph's Day. And actually, people should have been wearing white, I guess, but that's probably just too boring for the kids, right?
I suspect wearing red might be part of an Italian tradition. I know there is an extensive Italian devotion to St. Joseph, although devotion to St. Joseph is present in many cultures.
Yeah, well, they have St. Joseph tables, don't they, in Italian families and Italian parishes. Can you talk a little bit? Do you know a little bit about the St. Joseph tables? I just know there's a lot of food.
You know, I don't know much about the tradition other than there's a lot of food out there and I enjoy picking out on it.
Yes, well, I was invited to one once. It was not a tradition in my parish, but a parish I was invited to by a friend that did have a St. Joseph table. And it was just, I mean, picture like going into a parish gym and those big 6 foot long, you know, tables that they use that every Catholic parish has to have at least 100 of. Just table after table lined with every kind of food you can possibly imagine. And at the end of all the tables, a giant statue of St. Joseph. And it's all free, and everyone from the parish came. And it was, you know, kind of like the world's biggest potluck would be sort of the St. Joseph table. And I used to, you know, hear about them or see them much, much more frequently than I do now. They seem to kind of have fallen out of, not out of favor, but just out of practice, I think. I think some neighborhoods probably still do it, but I've just not heard of it, which is sad because I think it's a very beautiful, you know, after all the drinking of associated with St. Patrick's Day, it's, I think, nice to see sort of the, you know, that real generosity of spirit and family and parish and community that you see in those St. Joseph tables.
Oh, absolutely. And any excuse to make a feast day really a feast is important. There's a reason we call them feast days.
Right. No, especially in the middle of a season of fasting. So it's even more improper. Well, so St. Joseph is a patron saint of a bunch of things and a bunch of countries, including Canada. But he is the patron saint of fathers and of families, of the home and of the universal church. So I know, for example, you know, a lot of people have been doing the novena to St. Joseph prior to this, and the Pray More Novenas, which is a wonderful email service I can't recommend highly enough, that will send you a daily reminder to do your email prayers. spoke of St. Joseph before the novena in terms of if you have someone, if you have a special intention, you're trying to find a husband or you're having difficulties with the husband you currently have, and unfortunately you can't trade him in because once you do that, it's done. You're stuck with him or you get him for life, depending on how you look at it. So a husband or a spouse, that's a particular intention, but also jobs and homes, vocations, financial issues, which are a deep concern to a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of jobs and homes and family and, all that takes money. And so St. Joseph, for financial concerns, it was interesting that a lot of people were posting their intentions. And it was interesting to me to see how many of them did involve money.
Sure. And St. Joseph, because he, along with Mary, are the parents of the Holy Family of Jesus, Mary and Joseph. He is the patron saint of so many things that are directly related to family concerns, and because most people are married, that is the concern that most people have. So he really is directly an example and a patron for most people in their day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm. So, I know of a number of different people that when they're selling their home want the house isn't selling, they can go to, or even sometimes realtors provide this, a small statue of St. Joseph that you bury upside down in your yard, which I'm sorry, I just, I'm just absolutely opposed to that for all sorts. I think it's disrespectful to St. Joseph. I'm much more of the mind that you put St. Joseph's statue in a place of honor in your home and you pray to him. But do you ever have your parishioners asking you about bearing poor St. Joseph upside down in the yard? And why does he have to be upside down? I don't understand.
I have gotten questions about that on occasion in the parish and in other places. Why does he have to be buried upside down? When you get that level, really, it has devolved at that point into superstition, which fundamentally is an attempt to control God to get the outcome that one wants. And that if I follow these particular steps, this exact outcome will happen. And that's not what God is all about.
Mm-hmm.
To ask St. Joseph to pray for you and to bring those intentions to St. Joseph is a very good and a holy thing. But when we get to the point where we think that we're in control, then it does go downhill and it is the opposite of religion. It's trying to grasp at God and trying to put God under us rather than put ourselves under God.
Right. It's like a kind of a magical potion sort of thing, isn't it? Like a formulaic, I do this, now you'll do this. And
right. And that's not how God is. It's like trying to tell your parents, well, if I do this, are you going to do that for me? Well, your parents might legitimately say, well, no, because that's not what's good for you. And likewise, God has his plans and God works in ways to give us what we need, but not necessarily in the ways that we want. I mean, God certainly will answer our prayers, but he mm-hmm. won't always give us exactly what we think we're asking for.
Yeah. There's and St. Joseph, though, I have to say, I would absolutely recommend him to you if you're buying a home, particularly if you're first time buyers and you've never done this before. I remember when my husband and I were looking ourselves, and we had been praying and praying, and we simply could. It was at the time when the housing market, at least in the Chicago area, we were at the top of the bubble, and so literally people would list houses and they'd go for $10,000 more than the listing price 3 hours later. I mean, it was crazy. You had to basically be there when they were hammering the sign into the lawn, or you didn't have a chance. And a house opened that had been, we had put a bid on a condominium, actually, a couple of weeks before, and our bid was not accepted. But what was interesting, Father Brendan, we put in this bid, and I remember I went to bed that night, and I could not sleep all night long. I tossed and turned, and I had no peace about the decision, but we were getting kind of desperate because we had to be out of our apartment, and we had to buy something. And so 2 weeks later, this house opened up, and we wound up getting in a bidding war with another couple. And we had a wonderful charismatic Catholic realtor who worked with us. And I remember the three of us stood outside the house and we prayed, and she called us that night and said, I don't know why, because you guys bid less, but they chose you over the other couple. So we were just shocked, and it wound up being the perfect house for our little family. And, I really believe that St. Joseph's intercession helped the sellers make that decision on our behalf.
Sure. And by all means, I tell people, have a statue to St. Joseph, have it blessed, pray and ask St. Joseph to pray for you. And as with all of our prayers, close with that great prayer that Jesus has in the Garden of Gethsemane. Nevertheless, Father, not what I will, but what you will be done.
Right, exactly. However, I really would like this particular thing, if you can manage it for now. I'm kidding.
Nothing wrong with how I know.
My prayers are very pushy, Father. It's probably not good. But anyway.
Well, we can tell God what we want, but ultimately we have to recognize that God knows what we need better than that.
Correct. Right. Of course. And we have to, you know, you can't enter into anything, you know, any kind of prayer intention telling God what to do, because often what God wants for you is better. You know, again, had we gotten that condo, we wouldn't have wound up in that, you know. I really think God was sparing us from something that wouldn't have been a good decision. But, you know, another super interesting story about St. Joseph that I love is the one that involves the staircase at the Chapel of Loreto in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Father, I don't know if you're familiar with this story. Aletheia, which is a Catholic website, A-L-E-T-E-I-A, has a wonderful story on this. The name of the story is The Staircase That St. Joseph Built in New Mexico. And it has to deal with the Chapel of Our Lady of Light, which was inspired, the structure of the chapel was inspired by the Sainte-Chapelle in Paris, the famous chapel in Paris. And the Sisters of Loreto were coming from Kentucky to Santa Fe to start, their order was starting a school for girls. And the chapel was finished, but then, unfortunately, when the chapel was done, the builders, they hadn't really planned properly, and there was no way to climb from the nave into the choir, which was on the second floor of the choir loft. And there was no place to put a staircase because it would have cut into basically about a third of the pews, you know, in the chapel at that point. So they told the builders, said to the nuns, listen, we're sorry. You're just going to have to demolish the choir. But the nuns instead prayed this novena to St. Joseph. And according to all of the testimonies that they have, a man appeared at the door saying that he could help them build the stairway, but he had to have complete privacy to do his work. That was his one condition. So apparently the stranger locked himself in the chapel for 3 months and with a saw and a square and a couple of other things. And as soon as his workday was finished, he would go back to wherever he was staying. And then when it was over, he just disappeared. And he never asked the sisters for any payment for building the staircase. And so the staircase is 6 meters high. It's a spiral staircase, and it was built without any nails or any glue, and it has no central support system whatsoever. And architects who have studied it have said, literally, this staircase is impossible. Like, you can't, this defies gravity. It defies explanation. So, and so the tradition, you know, among the sisters and that's been passed down from generation to generation is that the carpenter who showed up may have been St. Joseph himself. It's a very beautiful, it's a wonderful, beautiful, pious story. But still, I love that the crafting of this staircase and the story of the staircase has to this day defied explanation from architects who have looked at it, from, you know, engineers who have tried to study how this staircase could possibly still be standing. So it's a wonderful little story. Again, it's at Aletheia, aletheia.org, and the name of the story is The Staircase That St. Joseph Built in New Mexico. So I would recommend that to you. St. Joseph can show up for these sisters and build them a staircase. I mean, imagine what he can or cannot do for you. So, Father, before we move on to our next topic in the conversation, any final thoughts on St. Joseph or particular books or articles about him that you like that you would recommend to our listeners?
Well, certainly I recommend simply praying with the scriptures about St. Joseph, simply noticing when he shows up, because it's very limited. It's only in the early life of Jesus, and reflecting on that, and especially for men out there to look at who he is and to see where he might be showing you an example for how to grow in your own sense of holiness, and especially for the husbands and the fathers out there, how he is a husband and a father and what true love for a wife and for a child looks like.
You know, Father, that's a beautiful note. Before we go to our break, I would just say, for a visual depiction of St. Joseph, I think no one ever did it better than Franco Zeffirelli in his version of Jesus of Nazareth. Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth, which has to be 30 years old now, I would think, but I still, to this day, believe that that's the best representation of the gospel stories put into film. And the person who played St. Joseph was just magnificent. He was everything you would have wanted a St. Joseph to be. So if you're looking for something, and also I have to say, the passion scenes in that particular film are absolutely beautiful, and they will rivet themselves inside your mind. So, well, when we come back, we're going to talk about rebooting your Lent. If you have fallen off the Lenten wagon, what do you do to get back on? We've got 2 weeks till Easter. Father Brendan's going to give us some advice on how to reboot your Lent if you've fallen off the wagon. So please don't go away. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Do you have loved ones who are away from the church? Do you feel helpless, anxious, or concerned because people you love no longer consider themselves Catholic? My name is Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. I am a religious sister with the Daughters of St. Paul, but I am also a former atheist. I was raised Catholic but rejected my faith for over 10 years. Evangelizing our friends and family is the most difficult kind of evangelization, but it is possible. I have written a book called The Prodigal You Love, Inviting Loved Ones Back to the Church, to help you invite your loved ones back to the church. You can find more information about this book at pauline.org/prodigalyoulove. Together, let's start an evangelization revolution.
Welcome back. It's Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change. And I am joined today by Father Brendan Guilfoyle, who's the associate pastor at St. George Church in Tinley Park, Illinois, which is in the southwest suburbs of Chicago. And Father Brendan and I are going to tackle a topic that I am sure is of interest to almost all of our listeners. Can't imagine it wouldn't be. And that's on how to reboot your Lent. So we are about two-thirds of the way through Lent. We've got about 2 weeks to go. And Father Brendan, I think for so many people, this is sort of the point. We were talking earlier in the show today about how since it is St. Joseph's Day, everybody gets a break from Lent. So if you've given up anything or you're abstaining from something, because it is the Feast of St. Joseph, you are entitled to have it. So today is a celebration, and you are expected to celebrate, not just allowed to, but you're expected to acknowledge this special day in the way that it deserves to be acknowledged. But Father, I think for a lot of people, and I can include myself in this, you know, this is not the first time they may have, they may or may not have, you know, fallen off the Lenten bandwagon. Can you give us, first of all, you know, if somebody came to you for spiritual direction and, you know, confessed this to you or wanted to talk to you about this, how would you guide them?
Well, the important thing to understand is, first of all, Lent is hard. Mm-hmm. It is a challenge, and that's something we have to recognize, that any time we're called to sacrifice because of our weaknesses, that can be a challenge. You know, I kind of reflect on that beautiful prayer that opens up Ash Wednesday Mass, where we talk about embarking on this campaign of Christian service. Hmm. And it's a great prayer. It, you know, makes us feel like, you know, we're warriors, we're on top, we're going to do this, and we're going to go hard. And it just reminds me of, you know, people heading off to fight or people heading off to begin a New Year's resolution, like, I'm going to go to the gym and get buff this year or whatever. Right. And we're motivated at the very beginning. And there are times when it is easy, and thank God for those times.
Right.
And it requires a sustained commitment. And that sustained commitment, that long slog, is tough. And that's part at the heart of why we celebrate Lent for so long, is because any kind of sacrifice is easy in the times when we really feel that passion. And there are times when our passion, our emotions wane. And that's where it becomes a challenge, and it becomes a challenge to build up those good habits.
Right.
One of the things that I usually use, and I suppose part of it is because I help teach morals class for the lay leadership program in the Archdiocese. I do a lot of reading on moral issues, but looking at what we call virtue ethics in the church, the idea that who we are can be formed by our habitual actions, that we practice certain actions and we habituate ourselves to do either good or evil things, and that fundamentally goes to the root of who we are as human beings, as creatures of habit. We are creatures of habit. And we say that like it's a bad thing. It's not, not strictly speaking, because it means that we can build up good habits so that it becomes easy for us to do the good.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we're broken. Unfortunately, we're still in need of redemption, and so we can get into habits that are flawed, and those habits are hard to change. And so we have to keep working on them day after day.
Do you think, you know, what you've just said, Father, first of all, extremely helpful, because it gives a terrific overview of, I think, how we need to look at Lent and the particular Lenten disciplines. But I'm reminded of a story of, actually, this young man told it on himself, a young Irish man who went to Medjugorje and had a complete radical conversion experience. He basically went to Medjugorje because his parents said, either you go or you're never setting foot in this. I mean, he was just living a life of debauchery and, you know, had hit rock bottom, was back home with his parents. And the parents made his coming, being able to live with them, the condition for that was his making this pilgrimage to Medjugorje. So he goes and has his first confession, and it's probably about 20 years is my guess. I think he was in his mid-20s at the time. So he, and again, he's telling this story on himself. This is not a priest breaking the confessional seal. And he said, so I knelt down next to, I just want to make that clear, because sometimes people, I do think people sometimes, just as an aside, think Father might slip up and reveal something I've revealed, you know, and that just isn't something that's done. Mm-hmm. So people should not be concerned about going to confession for that reason. But at any rate, this young man, you know, and he said, and I knelt down and I said, Father, I've broken all 10 commandments and committed sins of impurity. And he said, that's all I said. He said, and the priest looked down at him and said, okay, son, you're going to have to be a little more explicit than that. And so he said he spent probably close to an hour with me, and we went through every commandment. And at the end, he said, I just felt like a huge weight had been lifted when he absolved me. And then he said, you know, I told the priest, while I'm here in Medjugorje, I'm not drinking, I'm not smoking, I'm fasting. And so the priest took off his stole, took him across the street to a little convenience store and bought him a pack of cigarettes and said, you're doing too much. Don't do it all at the same time. And gave him some cigarettes and said, don't try to do it all. And so, you know, and I thought, you know, that is so wise, because here's this young man now, you know, just making this tremendous change in his life, but realizing if you start with that kind of, I'm giving up everything, very few people can sustain that kind of cold turkey. And especially with something that's addictive like nicotine, you know, I thought that I was glad that the priest got him the cigarettes and not, you know, a beer. But I thought that's a very wise priest.
Sure. And, you know, that certainly is one of the things that, you know, we as priests have to challenge people on, is making sure that they are doing something, yes, that is hard, but also that is reasonable. And that's important.
Yeah.
The other thing that I try to tell people is, because we are creatures of habit, and because we give up things that we're used to having, it is easy to fall back into even without thinking. And so we have to be patient with ourselves. We have to remember that we're called to make each day new. And so that's one of the things we have to do, is admit, okay, I did screw up here, receive forgiveness, and then use that as an opportunity to start over again, that we can have these fresh starts. You know, it's the same as true in a much bigger level in a vocation. You know, on a priest's ordination day, yeah, he can really have the fire lit to go and preach and to live a life of celibacy for God and to really just go out and set the world on fire, you know, when he's 5 years in and when there's been a meeting where everyone disagrees with him and there's just one person who really feels bad for him and is giving him sympathy, you know, all of a sudden it can be more challenging. Likewise in a marriage, you know, when on your wedding day there's the feelings of romance and you want to be together forever, and that's a good and wonderful thing. And then, you know, 5-6 years down the road, a random Tuesday afternoon, you've had a stressful day, so has the spouse. the kids are screaming and the house is in chaos, you know, it can be hard to remember.
No, that never happens, Father. Ever.
No, never.
No, not in my house. I don't even know what you're talking about. No, but you're absolutely right.
Right. Yeah. So we have to have those moments where we can say, okay, I need to remind myself of why I did this in the first place. And so it's, okay, well, marriage is not about just, you know, getting the yard cleaned and taking the kids to school. It's about giving yourself to another person and giving yourself to a family. And we need to remind ourselves of that. You know, priests need to remind themselves that, you know, priesthood is about giving myself over to God and bringing the sacraments, bringing the beauty of God to people. And it's easy to forget about that. Likewise, in Lent, we're giving this up for God. It's easy to forget about we're doing it for God and just think about, oh, well, I'm giving something up.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, one of my friends, Dawn Eden, writes this book on chastity, and she talks about looking at chastity not in terms of what we're giving up, but rather in terms of saying yes to God. And fundamentally, it's about living a life for God and living in a life in accord with what God's plan is. Because if we obsess about the fact that we're saying no to sex, then ultimately we're going to obsess about sex, and that's going to make us bitter and resentful or fall right off the wagon.
Well, right.
It's true not just for chastity, it's true for anything in life. If we focus on what we're saying no to, you know, first of all, it's way too easy to fall in temptation. And secondly, it's easy to say, well, what's the point anyways? Why am I giving all this up? Rather,
right.
We have to focus on what are we saying yes to? And we need to renew that constantly.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting, I think, for a lot of people now, I guess when you're under the impression, or you somehow have the idea that, like, in order to really do Lent well, you have to not drink through all of Lent, which I know a lot of people do that, you know, and that's a really admirable sacrifice. Or they don't eat at all between meals during all of Lent, or they don't have sweets. But there are other things that harm us or can be potentially harmful if we misuse them or overuse them. And a lot of those, it's interesting how many things I have seen this year that involve cell phone usage and social media usage during Lent, and how some people are, you know, I know people that are completely off Facebook and Twitter for Lent. They are not opening it. They're not looking. They're actually reading newspapers, you know, and going to the television news stations in order to get their news. But because it had become such a time, you know, vacuum for them. And, you know, I find that myself that, you know, I remember one time my youngest daughter saying to me, Mom, you know, I don't know why you want to talk to me. You're always looking at your cell phone. And, I mean, if there's anything that a child could say to a mother in particular, it was like a stab in my heart. And I thought, you know, this is one thing I need. So one of the things I'm trying to do for Lent is when I am in the presence of my children, not to be on my cell phone. I mean, there's obviously things for my jobs and the work kind of work that I do that I have to have it with me. And I have to be, you know, on email and using social media from time to time because of the nature of my work. But I have tried to make a conscious effort not to do that in the presence of my kids. So it doesn't even have to be sort of a bodily fast, I think. It can be a mental fast from things that are consuming our time or our mental energy.
Right. A fast should be removing something that you like so that you can build up that practice of saying no to your own immediate desires precisely in order to free you for what's truly good and what's truly important in life.
Right.
Well, so for me, giving up sweets, I mean, sweets are not bad in and of themselves, although I eat way too many of them. And so practicing saying no to them reminds me that, okay, I have to preserve my health because I don't live for myself. I live for others, for my parishioners. And you know, certainly for the cell phone use, to say no to the cell phone is to say yes to your children, mm-hmm. which is the way you're called to grow in
right.
holiness.
Well, that's another way to look at it, isn't it? I'm not saying no to my cell phone. I'm saying yes to my children. So, okay, listeners, when we come back, we're talking about how to reboot your Lent. And there's an excellent article at aletheia.org, A-L-E-T-E-I-A, called Here's How to Reboot Your Lent by Lee Fitzpatrick Sneed, which I would highly recommend to all of you if you're looking for little ways to get yourself back on track if you've fallen off the Lenten wagon. But when we return, Father Brendan Guilfoyle is going to give us some additional inspiration and guidance on how to do that. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every first Friday, Jeff Hammond sits in to host Winds of Change to talk about the First Friday devotion. Jeff is the section representative of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Jeff will share the history, tradition, and prayers of the First Friday devotion. First Fridays at noon on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the Sacrament of Reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750, WNDZ, and live streaming at windsofchangeshow.org. I'm joined today here by Father Brendan Guilfoyle, who is the Associate Pastor of St. George Church in Tinley Park, Illinois. And we're talking about how to reboot your Lent. And my idea for having this conversation with Father came from an excellent article I read in Alatea.org called Here's How to Reboot Your Lent by Lee Fitzpatrick Sneed, which acknowledges and put into words for me, you know, what I think so many people are feeling and thinking, Father Brendan, and that's, gosh, you know, I didn't make it even through the first 10 days without giving in and having that piece of candy. Or what do you say to somebody who comes to you with that? Or what would you suggest if, you know, someone wanted to talk to you about this particular topic?
Well, I mean, the first and most important thing is to restart. And as Catholics, how do we do that? Well, we restart our Lenten lives the same way we can restart anything. Admitting that something has gone wrong, receiving God's forgiveness, and allowing that relationship to be made new. And that's what the Sacrament of Reconciliation is all about. It's not about beating ourselves up. It's about acknowledging, these are what I have done wrong. I'm sorry for that. And not only that, but I want my life to be different. I want my life to change. You know, I remember one time, this wasn't a Lent example, but one time I was going through some difficulties in seminary and just really questioning a lot of things and frustrated and having a little bit of a depressive episode and complaining to one of my classmates about that and nothing about sinfulness. And he looked at me and said, well, when was the last time you went to confession? I said, well, it's been a few weeks and I don't think I've done anything too major. And he said, well, you know, maybe not, but go, because it's a chance to start over. And that blew me away. It's like, that's actually a really good idea. I went to confession. I, doing an examination of conscience beforehand, realized, well, there was some stuff maybe I should have confessed, should have thought that I needed to confess that I hadn't. And in receiving absolution, you know, I had been given a chance to make my life new. And it didn't magically take all the problems away.
Right.
It doesn't do that. But it did make them bearable. It reminded me that, you know, it renewed my relationship in a physical, in a way, it actually did transform that relationship. And it also reminded me that God is with me and that God would be there walking with me. I simply had to return to him. And that's the theme of Lent. Mm-hmm. And we hear it constantly in Lent. Return to me. Return to God with your whole heart.
Right. And don't be afraid to come back. And I'm, you know, so
sure.
Yeah, I think that's, I do think fear is something that, you know, limits people's ability sometimes, you know, to go to confession. It is concern, but, you know, when, if you just, again, to kind of go back to the beginning of our conversation about St. Joseph, look at the way in which Jesus had this very tender fatherly relationship with St. Joseph. I think you need to think of, you know, the confessional like that, don't you?
Well, absolutely. And the confessional is a chance to encounter God who wants to forgive you. One of the things that challenges people is having to admit their own sinfulness. And I'll admit, it's hard.
Yeah.
No one's going to question that.
Right.
I still struggle admitting some of my sins. But here's the thing I've always noticed is once I start to admit them, it becomes easier. I can acknowledge that. And here's the thing I tell people, you know, the sin already happened. That's way in the past. You're catching up to it now. You're acknowledging it now. It's hard to acknowledge now, but the priest is aware that, you know, the sin has already happened and is gone. Now, we haven't seen the results of your particular sin, but we know that sin is present in the world, and we want to see holiness. We want to see transformation, and that's the beauty of the sacrament, is once we acknowledge, hey, there is this sin in my heart, there is this sin in my mind, and I need to get rid of it. Once you've acknowledged that that's what needs to happen, now transformation is possible, and that's really the joy of the confessional, is seeing that kind of transformation. That's why I love hearing confessions, not because I'm interested in what people are bringing to me. I'm not. It's actually, frankly, kind of boring when you're listening to it. It's because it's all variations on the same thing. Yeah. I've thought about myself instead of about God or others. That's
right.
What
That's,
all of it boils
you get,
down
right,
to.
The big overarching one, right?
But the beauty of it is transformation. What does a priest do? What do the sacraments do? They transform, in the case of the Eucharist, bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ, but ultimately they transform people. And that's why priests become priests, to transform people. And so getting to see that transformation, that's the beautiful and loving part. And the whole idea of reconciliation is it's a restart. It's a chance to start over. And so the more we embrace that opportunity, as well as all the other opportunities to start over, you know, the more we can allow God in our lives. That's why we have to confess our sins in general before we worship. We start our Mass after the sign of the cross and the Lord be with you. I confess to Almighty God and to you, my brothers and sisters, that I have greatly sinned.
Mm-hmm.
We acknowledge that sin. We ask for forgiveness. And once we know who we are, and once we know that God still loves us, in spite of our sinfulness, still loves us so much that he wants to give us himself, then we can be transformed.
Right. And, you know, and you can transform yourself in little ways, Father Brendan. And I think that's, you know, what I love so much about this article at Alatea, you know, here's how to reboot your Lent, is that the author, Lee Fitzpatrick Sneed, talks about little things that one can do to kind of get yourself back in the Lenten mode. So that can be
sure.
Anything from, you know, she talks about, you know, maybe planning little extra visits to church around your errands. So, for example, you're dropping your kids off school and you think, wait, I'm right here at the parish school, or I'm two blocks away from the parish, from my parish. I'm going to pop in for a quick visit to the Blessed Sacrament. And, or I'm conversely, I'm at the end of the day going to pick my kids up from school. I'm going to stop into church for a minute. Making those little tiny visits to the Lord and the Blessed Sacrament, that's outside of your normal routine, which kind of re-gears your mind towards Lent being a time that's outside of the normal, right, our normal activities. And, you know, and she also talks about things like I mentioned earlier, stop the mindless checking of your phone, you know, and doing other little things. You know, for example, if you have a taste for Starbucks and you're driving past the Starbucks, you intentionally say, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I don't need it. I'll go home and make myself a cup of coffee this particular one time. It doesn't mean you give up Starbucks for all of Lent, but that particular time when you really wanted one, that can almost be a bigger sacrifice, can't it?
Well, it can. And the beauty of that sacrifice is it forces us to consider what's really important in life. What's really important, that Starbucks, that snack, or is it focusing on God? And it also gets us out of that mindless routine that we're in. Because the mindless routine that we're in any form of life, can take us away from God.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm passing by the pantry in the rectory and I have to say, remind myself, okay, as I'm stopping to get something, oh, wait, I'm not stopping. I'm not getting that munchie that I want. And realizing, then I have to think, okay, why am I doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm doing that for God. I'm doing that so that I can habituate myself to say no to myself and to say yes to God. And I'm forcing myself in a kind of different, counterintuitive way to think about God.
Right, right.
Same thing when we sacrifice the bigger things, like when we sacrifice even our money. It's saying that, well, the most important thing is not me providing for all the different things I want. It's being able to let that go and to let that even be burned up.
Yeah. Well, you know, so Father, I kind of want to fast forward another week into Lent and
sure.
Talk about Holy Week, because I know for some people, I've heard this before, you know, even if you've had the lousiest Lent, you know, and aside from not eating meat on Fridays and fasting on Ash Wednesday, you've done next to nothing. But I have heard, I think, gosh, was priest at my own parish, who might have said, during Holy Week, you can really make up for having a bad Lent. If you intentionally do Holy Week in the way that the church asked you to, it can bring you into that Lenten experience in a very intense way. So can you talk about that a little bit, what Holy Week is like and what are the different liturgies that Catholics can attend during Holy Week? I think people think Palm Sunday, and, you know, they may go to the stations on Good Friday or what have you, but there's a number of other different liturgies where you can be present to really live out Holy Week.
Oh, sure. I mean, there is the Palm Sunday Mass, and recognizing how different it is and recognizing that dichotomy that on the one hand, we're ready to welcome Jesus when it's convenient, and on the other hand, just in the same week or even in the same Mass, we're ready to shout, crucify him, crucify him.
Right.
To attend something like adoration is a good thing, to simply take time and say, I'm going to spend time with our Lord. To attend a service like Tenebrae, where we embrace the darkness, where we literally...
And what day does that happen for people who are not familiar with Tenebrae?
Tenebrae is usually the Wednesday of Holy Week. Before Holy Thursday, it's a chance to enter into darkness and to, you know, pray the Psalms and some of the darker, so to speak, prayers of the church, the prayers and the readings and the Psalms that talk about the darker aspects of our lives, the presence of sin, the sorrow that we have, and to see that God is still present in the midst of darkness. And then to attend the Triduum liturgies, the Mass on Holy Thursday, the Liturgy of the Word and Ritual of Communion on Good Friday, and the Easter Vigil. And the beauty of that is it's all essentially one long Mass that's interrupted at times, because you'll notice on Good Friday, they don't start with the sign of the cross, and they don't start with the sign of the cross on Holy Saturday even either.
You know, that's funny that you should say, because I've never noticed that. That's very, you know, well, that's what we have you in. That's
sure.
Why you're the expert and I am not. Interesting.
And yeah, there's actually no blessing on Holy Thursday or on Good Friday that we start with the sign of the cross on Holy Thursday with that Mass, and then it basically is one grand liturgy in which we experience Jesus giving of himself, his sacrificing of himself to his apostles in the form of the Eucharist, waiting with Jesus. And the theme of waiting is very particularly important because the disciples are supposed to wait an hour with Jesus before he's arrested and they fall asleep. And then the disciples are waiting for Jesus to rise again. And so we go through that cycle. We are given the Eucharist. We celebrate that. And then it gets dark, and the church becomes stark. And I remember talking to our Arts and Environment Committee at St. George, and someone was asking me, well, what kind of decorations do you want for Good Friday? And I said, none. Well, what about a crown of thorns or something, just because it's so plain in the church? And I said, none.
Wow. Well, Father Brennan, thank you. This is, you know, it's so helpful to hear about, you know, the starkness that we enter into Easter with, isn't it, that we're experiencing Holy Thursday with?
Of course, that fire comes in and the joy comes in on Sunday.
Right.
And we get to experience in an emotional and a physical way.
Yeah, because of the starkness.
Things.
Yeah. Well, Father Brendan Guilfoyle, thank you. Your insights have been incredibly helpful. This has been a beautiful conversation about St. Joseph and about how to reboot your Lent. Father, I thank you again. I hope you'll come back another time to continue our conversations. This has been Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Happy St. Joseph's Day to you all, and we'll see you next week.
Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. Changed. Read the signs, no time to hide. The winds have changed. What's there to say when right from wrong has become so obscure? It does not take that long. Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? The winds have changed.
truth left unsold, the truth left unsold.